You're listening to SBS On The Money with Ricardo Gonçalves.
It's your daily 10-minute business and finance news wrap for this Monday, the 11th of November 2024. The Australian share market fell today by 0.4%. We'll have the details with Elio D'Amato from Stockopedia soon. And later in the podcast, we find out how much it actually costs to get financial advice. But first to China, which is trying to grow its economy by 5%. And it launched some new economic stimulus measures at the weekend, $1.4 trillion US dollars worth. But investors were not impressed with it today. To find out more, I spoke with Gerard Berg, NAB's Senior Economist International. So Chinese authorities approved a US $1.4 trillion stimulus package at the weekend. That's on top of other recent stimulus measures. Yet it would appear the markets aren't happy about this. Commodity prices are down and the miners are being smashed. Why do you think that is? Is this stimulus package not enough?
Well, first off, we don't really see this as being stimulus at all. It's far more about risk management than actually boosting its economy through additional spending. So essentially what the package has allowed is for local governments to issue more debt, to bring debt that was otherwise off their balance sheets into their sort of official budgets. It doesn't add any more spending to governments. It provides them with a bit more clarity around the total level of local government debt. And it reduces the cost of interest for these local governments. I think the fact that it's not going to do anything to boost domestic demand in China is exactly why we've seen the market reaction that we have. This isn't likely to introduce any more consumption of, say, our natural resources.
Okay. What kinds of headwinds is the nation facing? Because there's also those threats of a potential 60% import tariff on Chinese goods into the US. How detrimental is that to the nation and the threat of a wider trade war?
I mean, at a high level, around about 15% of China's exports at the minute go to the US. So it's a pretty significant market for China overall. That said, that's down from about 18% where it was pre the first trade war back in 2018. Now, China faces a range of headwinds at the minute. We've got weak domestic demand that really is some of the factors coming out of COVID. We've got confidence among households pretty weak, inflation's still very low, and the jobs market is looking still pretty shaky. So all of that's leading to consumers remaining pretty cautious. We've got the fallout from its housing bubble bursting. Construction activity is still way down on the levels it was going back a few years. Sales of housing units are still very low, and that's probably going to continue for a number of years to come. And then we've got the declining level of the population in China and that it's continuing to age. So there's more pressure continuing on that workforce at the minute, which means that their savings levels are remaining really high. One of the things that we've been sort of hoping for to see out of some sort of sustainable fiscal stimulus is some sort of social support to mean that households don't have to save as much, particularly for things like retirement, that could then mean that they could reduce that saving and increase consumption. But so far, policymakers have been really resistant to that kind of change. Now, the trade question is still very much up in the air. Trump has talked about, you know, a 60% tariff on all goods coming out of China. You know, we're looking at that saying, is that a negotiation strategy? Is it a deliberate policy measure? And there's a lot of uncertainty as how it would be implemented. You know, would be implemented straight away, would be a process to implement it over a staged period of time. And then you get the questions of how would China retaliate? So that back in 2018 was what led to a full-blown trade war. So 60% might not be the upper limit if we see those sort of tit-for-tat tariffs continuing.
I guess there's a lot of moving parts, right? But how is all this going to impact Australia right now? Because China forms a very big part of our economy.
Yeah, very much so. Again, it depends how all of these factors play out. We sort of view it as being, on balance, a negative story for the world. Freer trade leads to greater efficiency and so forth. And so any increase of this sort of magnitude would see weaker growth. If this flows through into weaker demand for the overall volumes of our natural resources going into China, also going into related economies in Southeast Asia, that would be a net negative for Australia at that very high level. It could also impact demand for other exports out of Australia. Our agricultural exports that, you know, are going into the region, demand for education and tourism resources, exports could be negatively impacted by that overall level of lower level of economic activity in the region. So all of these on balance look like a net negative story for Australia.
That's Jared Berg there from NAB.
Now, Market Day on the SBS On The Money podcast.
As mentioned earlier, the Australian share market fell today. The S&P ASX 200 down 0.35% to 8,266. For more, I spoke with Elio D'Amato, a market analyst at Stockopedia. Elio, the ASX down today, the miners being smashed. To what extent are investors disappointed with China's latest $1.4 trillion US dollar worth of stimulus measures? Why?
Well, it's interesting you mentioned that. I mean, who am I to disagree with them? But I think their reaction is they were disappointed. And that's a lot of zeros that you rattle that off there. And look, I think the market was really wanting China to invest a lot of the money into growth initiatives to grow rather than what was announced, which was effectively propping up local governments in order to support their burgeoning debt balances where they've taken bad debts, as it were, and effectively are funding them through there. So the market is really genuinely quite disappointed that it really isn't investing in those future growth opportunities, particularly given the imminent arrival of potential tariffs from President-elect Donald Trump and his administration that have been, well, publicly announced and publicly spoken about well and truly before today. This was seen as a bit of a bazooka, as it were, to regards to upstaging those particular tariffs, when unfortunately investors just got a Nerf gun and there was really not much impact in regards to those new opportunities. I mean, do you think that the property sector over there accounts for about a fifth to a quarter of all GDP? This is a very big bite, and the steel makers, then by subsequent division, iron ore producers, basically all metal guys, even oil. I mean, you've got to remember China's the biggest importer of oil globally. Look, unfortunately, that's all been hit today, and hence it's flowed on to the remainder of the sector, which has been a real challenge for investors to get their head around, not just now, but over the last few months.
When you're looking at the market today, any news catching your attention?
Well, look, it's interesting. I mean, the only shining light out of the materials sector, I suppose, is IPL, Incitec Pivot, which is actually up today. But they told investors that they were actually recording a loss. And this is on the back of them selling off their Wagaman operation out of the US, as well as the closure of the manufacturing facility out in Queensland, which unfortunately to them, you know, meant that on a bottom line perspective, things weren't great, but they were eternally optimistic about the future. And it looks like investors have got to the bottom of that particular announcement in order to come up with that view. So that's good. The other thing that caught my news today was the final FIRB, or Financial Investment Review Board, or Foreign Investment Review Board, I should say, sorry, has now approved the deal where Stockland Group, as part of a consortium, will acquire 12 Lendlease community properties, or master community properties, which really was a bit of a point of conjecture in the lead-up with regards to some ACCC shuffling and the like, but it looks like that deal has got through. Now, as part of that announcement, confirming that they've received this final approval, they did slightly upgrade their funds from operations, only a tiny amount. But the good news is it looks like the deal is now pretty close to being done. And I think it is transformational. When you look at Stockland Group and where they've come from to what they're going to be now moving forward, I think it does add an element of stability to that business, which possibly wasn't there beforehand.
And where do you see the opportunities for investors at the moment?
Look, it's hard to say. It feels a bit like we're fighting over a few scraps after the football match, like a seagull does, you know, when we're trying to determine where there could be some good buying to be had at the moment. Obviously, I think those calling the death of gold, if they've been crying that out since the times of Cleopatra, they'd be disappointed, because we have come off record highs, but we're not that far from that level. So I still think that weakness in that particular sector does prove to be a bit of an opportunity at the moment if you are able to find some good solid producers. I mean, let's face it, the US dollar has been strengthening in recent times on the back of potentially inflationary expectations, which has been good. So therefore, that should do well for gold miners, notwithstanding the recent pullback in gold prices. But then again, if that turns around, they should do well there too. I would probably steer clear or be very wary of businesses focused on the consumer. It looks like the rising cost of living is starting to bite. I mean, I look at Endeavour today, who gave that update, and They told us that their retail division was effectively flat, and though hotels was up, was only up very slightly. It didn't take much to realize that profitability is going to be down on that business. So obviously they're facing a very challenged environment moving forward, and I don't think they're an island. I think that many client-facing businesses are going to feel that same impact, and therefore you want to just keep a very close eye in regards to those companies. Whereas those that can control a little bit more of their own destiny, particularly in those good margin IT businesses, for example, well, they've been doing quite well. And even healthcare could possibly have a bit more of a renaissance should they be able to get their things in gear and head in the right direction as well. And again, that comes down to margins. The juicy margins at the moment are quite defensive, as opposed to thinner margins, where I think that that being the great profit expander, increased costs and less demand will lead to some more losses down the track.
That's Elio D'Amato there from Stockopedia. Well, do you know how much it costs to get financial advice? And it would appear that there is no middle ground when it comes to it. For more, John Baldock spoke with Ian Fryer, the general manager at Researchers ChantWest.
Tell me about what the missing middle really is.
So the missing middle is reflecting that when someone retires, they probably need some sort of financial advice. But at the moment, what they can get is not really fit for purpose. They can either get something really simple, like how should I invest my money? The other option is you could say, okay, I want a full financial plan. And they can go to a financial advisor and get a full financial plan, but that's actually a fair bit of money.
So how much does it actually cost to get this financial advice from the basic to the more complex?
Most superannuation funds will provide what they call intra-fund advice, which is advice on a single issue. The other option is you can get what's called comprehensive advice, which means you get a full financial plan. So it looks at everything you've got, all your assets, all your liabilities, any loans, mortgages, etc., and gives a full financial plan. But that's probably about $5,000. So most people don't want to pay $5,000. Most people don't necessarily have that sitting around as they retire and thinking, yes, I'll spend that. So there is a massive gap between nothing and $5,000. There is, but there is an opportunity here for funds to do something in the middle. If that can be done for under $1,000, and a few funds are starting to do that, then I think a lot of people would take that up.
Ultimately, whose responsibility is it to address the gap in knowledge in financial literacy?
Yeah, I think it's got to be a team effort. I think the superannuation funds have a big role to play. The superannuation funds try to address that. Sometimes they succeed, sometimes they don't. So we're hopeful that in the next few months, there'll be some legislation coming through which will make that possible. It's taken quite a while for government to get to this point on it, but it is important to get it right.
What kind of proportion of people are we talking about that are actually missing out on the advice that they should be getting?
Yeah, it's hard to know. And it's hard to know what proportion of people in that middle space would want to seek advice. But the majority of people who are moving into a retirement situation probably need some sort of advice. The proportion of people who are getting comprehensive advice is small. To be honest, the proportion of people who retire who are getting the simple advice is also small. So the need in there in the middle is massive. It's way bigger than 50%. Will all those members in the middle want to take it up? Not necessarily, but if we can somehow get the news out there that funds in the near future are providing this advice and that it's a really good idea to get this piece of advice maybe just once in your life as you retire and it can make a big difference, a lot of people could take this up. It'd be wonderful if the majority of people retiring knew that they could get cost-effective advice at retirement and take it up.
John Fryer there from ChantWest.
This SBS On The Money stream is provided for informational purposes only. The content in this stream should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and it does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision.
This SBS On The Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only. The content on this podcast should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision.